This audio program is brought to you courtesy of Audible.com. Audible, audio that speaks to you wherever you are.
We present Agatha Christie's The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, with John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and John Woodvine as Dr. Shepherd, the storyteller.
Mrs. Ferrars died on the night of the 16th to the 17th of September, a Thursday. I was sent for at 8 o'clock on the morning of Friday the 17th. There was nothing I could do. She had been dead some hours. It was just a few minutes after 9 when I reached home once more.
Is that you, James? What are you doing out there?
Just hanging up my overcoat.
Why don't you come and get your breakfast?
Just coming.
You've had an early call?
Yes, King's Paddock, Mrs. Ferrars.
I know.
How did you know?
The milkman told me. Well?
Bad business. Nothing to be done.
What did she die of? Heart failure?
She died of an overdose of Veronal. She's been taking it lately for sleeplessness. Must have taken too much.
Nonsense. She took it on purpose.
Now, why on earth should Mrs. Ferrars wish to commit suicide? A widow, still fairly young, very well off, and nothing to do but enjoy life. Now, what possible reason could
remorse.
She have?
Remorse.
Remorse?
Yes. You're always so preoccupied, tinkering about your electric gadgets. You don't notice what's going on under your nose. You never would believe me when I told you she poisoned her husband. I'm more than ever convinced of it now. She's been haunted by what she did. 10 to 1, she's left a letter confessing everything.
She didn't leave a letter of any kind.
You'd thought she'd have left something for Roger Ackroyd. After all, they were practically man and wife.
Caroline.
And who could blame them? I mean, after all, Mrs. Ackroyd died of drink, and Mrs. Ferrars' husband was an alcoholic. If his sister-in-law hadn't descended on him from Canada, they'd have been married by now. Now, where are you going?
I'm going down to the village, Caroline. I've got better things to do than sit around here listening to gossip.
Shepherd! Just the man I wanted to get hold of. This is a terrible business.
You've heard, then. I'm very sorry, Ackroyd.
It's worse than you know. Look here, I've got to talk to you. Can you come back with me now?
Hardly. I've got 3 patients to see, and I must be back by 12 to see to my surgery.
Then dine with me tonight. My sister-in-law will be there, and Flora. Oh, and Hector Blunt's coming along. But I'll think of some excuse to get away from them. I must talk to you.
I went home thoughtful, to find several patients waiting in the surgery. I had dismissed the last of them, as I thought, when I perceived one more patient, Ackroyd's housekeeper, Miss Russell.
Good morning, Doctor. I should be much obliged if you'd look at my knee.
I took a look, but I was very little wiser when I had done so. I prescribed some liniment. But she seemed inclined to linger.
Not that I believe that anything will do me much good. I don't believe in all these drugs. Drugs do a lot of harm. Look at the cocaine habit. Suppose you are a slave of the drug habit. Is there any cure?
I answered her as best I could, but for the life of me I couldn't understand what she was getting at. Then she asked me whether there were any poisons so rare that they baffled detection. I wondered whether in some roundabout way she was trying to question me about Mrs. Ferrars. I was quite relieved when Caroline sounded the gong for lunch.
What's the trouble with Ralph Peyton?
There isn't any.
And why is he staying at the Three Boars, instead of Fernley Park with his foster father?
Ackroyd didn't mention him.
He arrived at the Three Boars yesterday morning, and he's still there. Last night he was out with a girl.
One of the barmaids?
No, that's just it. He went out to meet her. I don't know who she is, but I can guess.
Flora Ackroyd. Mm. But why not see her at Fernley?
Secretly engaged. Old Ackroyd won't hear of it, and they have to meet this way. And there's another thing. I was walking through the wood this morning when I heard voices.
Did you?
I did. One of them was Ralph's. And do you know what he said?
I can't imagine.
He was talking to a girl. I didn't manage to see who it was.
How deeply frustrating for you.
And he said it was on the cards that the old man, I suppose he meant Ackroyd, was likely to cut him off without a shilling. And he said he needed the money and didn't want the will to be altered. What do you make of that?
Good Lord!
Hmm? What is it?
An enormous vegetable marrow has just landed on the lawn.
It must have come over the garden wall. Our new neighbour, I suppose.
Mr. Porrett.
The man you say looks like a retired hairdresser.
I'd better go and have a word with him.
Of you a thousand pardons, monsieur. I suddenly became impatient with the marrows. I seized the biggest and hurled him over the wall.
Well, I sincerely hope
do not disquiet yourself. It is not with me a habit. But can you figure to yourself, monsieur, that a man may work towards leading at last a life of leisure, and then, when he has attained it, he yearns for the old busy days and the old occupations he thought himself so glad to leave?
Oh, yes, I understand it well enough. A year ago, I came into a legacy, enough to enable me to realize a dream. I've always wanted to travel, to see the world. Oh, that was a year ago, and I'm still here.
Ah, but you can still realize that dream whenever you choose.
No longer, alas. I was foolish, and worse than foolish. Greedy.
Oh, you speculated.
An Australian gold mine.
And now?
I have nothing.
Well. I would be very pleased if you would present that marrow to your sister.
Oh, thank you.
By the way, I should like to ask you a question. You doubtless know everyone in this tiny village. Who is the young man with the very dark hair and eyes and the handsome face?
Well, that must be Ralph Peyton, the adopted son of Mr. Ackroyd.
Of course, I should have guessed.
You know Mr. Ackroyd?
Mr. Ackroyd knew me in London, when I was at work there. Oh, I have asked him to say nothing of my profession down here.
Indeed.
And so, Ralph Peyton is going to marry Mr. Ackroyd's niece, the charming Miss Flora.
Who told you so?
Mr. Ackroyd. About a week ago. But there is something about that young man I do not understand.
Hello, Sarah.
Oh, hello.
Do you know where I can find Mr. Peyton?
Oh, he's just...
Shepherd, glad to see you. One person I am glad to see in this infernal place.
What's the place been doing to you?
It's a long story. Things haven't been going very well with me, Doctor. Not to mince matters, I'm in the devil of a mess. In fact, I haven't the least idea what to do next.
What's the matter?
It's my confounded stepfather.
What's he done?
It isn't what he's done yet, but what he's likely to do. I'm fairly up against it this time.
It was just a few minutes before 7:30 when I reached Fernley Park. The night was such a fine one that I had preferred to come on foot. Parker, the butler, relieved me of my overcoat and then withdrew. Raymond, Ackroyd's secretary, was passing with a handful of papers.
Good evening, Doctor. Coming to dine, or is this a professional call?
Good evening, Raymond. I brought the black bag just in case. I'm expecting a summons to a confinement.
Why don't you go into the drawing room? You know the way. I must take these papers to Mr. Ackroyd. I'll tell him you're here.
Just as I was turning the handle of the door into the drawing room, I noticed a sound from within. The shutting of a window, I took it to be.
Oh, I was just coming out.
Miss Russell, I'm afraid I'm a few minutes early.
I don't think so. It's after 7:30. I must be going now. They'll all be down in a moment. I only came in here to see that the flowers were all right.
My eye was caught by what I believe is called a silver table, the lid of which lifts, and through the glass of which you can see the contents. There were one or two pieces of old silver, a baby shoe that was said to have belonged to King Charles I, and some Chinese jade figures. Wanting to examine one of these more closely, I lifted the lid. It slipped through my fingers and fell. And that was the sound which I had heard.
Admiring the family curios, Doctor.
Flora, how lovely you look.
I don't believe Charles I ever wore that nasty little thing at all. But you haven't congratulated me yet, haven't you heard?
Well, I have heard rumours.
I'm going to marry Ralph. Uncle is very pleased. It keeps me in the family, you see.
Excuse me, Miss Flora, Doctor, dinner is served.
Dinner was not a cheerful affair. Ackroyd was visibly preoccupied. His sister-in-law gushed in an ice-cold way. Hector Blunt looked as if he'd rather be out on the veldt shooting big game. And Flora was unusually silent. When the meal was over, Ackroyd slipped his arm through mine and led me off to his study.
Bring your bag with you. Then they'll think it's a professional consultation. Make sure the window's closed, will you? And put the latch across.
Closed and latched. Now, what on earth's the matter?
Come here and sit down. No one can hear us, can they?
No, the door's closed. What's the trouble?
Shepherd, you attended Ashley Ferrers in his last illness, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Did it ever enter your head that he might have been poisoned?
I'll tell you the truth. At the time, I had no suspicions whatever, but since... Well, it was mere idle talk of my sister's that first put the idea into my head.
He was poisoned.
Who by?
His wife.
How do you know that?
She told me so herself.
When?
Yesterday. Oh, my God, yesterday. It seems 10 years ago. I want your advice, Shepherd, in absolute confidence, of course. I can't carry the weight of all this by myself.
Why don't you tell me the whole story? How did Mrs. Ferrers come to make this confession to you?
3 months ago, I asked her to marry me, and she refused. I asked her again, and she consented, but wouldn't allow me to make the engagement public until her year of mourning was up. Yesterday, I called upon her to remind her that it was 1 year and 3 weeks since her husband's death. And without the least warning, she broke down, completely. She told me everything, her hatred of her brute of a husband, her growing love for me, and the dreadful means she had taken. Poison. Oh, my God.
I'm very sorry. It must have been terrible for you.
It seems that there is one person who has known all along, who has been blackmailing her for huge sums. It was the strain of that which drove her nearly mad.
Who was the man?
She wouldn't tell me his name. She asked me for 24 hours, made me promise to do nothing until the end of that time. She told me that I would hear from her. It never entered my head what she meant to do. Suicide.
But the responsibility for her death doesn't lie at your door.
The question is, what am I to do now? How am I to get hold of that scoundrel who drove her to her death as surely as if he'd killed her? Is he to go scot-free?
You mean you want to hunt him down?
I'm convinced that by deliberately choosing death, she wanted the whole thing to come out, if only to be revenged on the man who drove her to desperation. Yes? Who is it?
The Evening Post, sir.
Ah, yes, thank you, Parker. This is her writing, Shepherd. She must have gone out and posted it last night, just before she...
Read it.
My very dear Roger, a life calls for a life. Shepherd, forgive me, but I must read this alone. It was meant for my eyes and my eyes only.
At least read it through while I'm here.
No, I'd rather wait.
Well, at least read the name of the man.
I'm sorry, Shepherd, no.
And so I left him there, with the letter still unread. I hesitated with my hand on the door handle, looking back and wondering if there was anything I had left undone. I told Parker that his master did not wish to be disturbed and stepped out into the night. The clock of the village church was striking 9 as I passed through the lodge gates.
Is this the way to Fernley Park, sir?
Oh, these are the lodge gates.
Oh, thank you, sir. I'm a stranger in these parts, you see.
10 minutes later, I was at home once more.
That'll be Mrs. Bates. The baby might at least have waited till the morning.
Ah, oh, no peace for the wicked. Yeah? What did you say? What? Certainly, I'll come at once.
What is it, James?
That was Parker telephoning from Fernley. They've just found Roger Ackroyd. Murdered.
Where is Dr. Shepherd?
Where is he?
I beg your pardon, sir.
Mr. Ackroyd, don't stand there staring at me, man. Have you notified the police?
The police, sir?
What's the matter with you, Parker? You said your master had been murdered.
The master murdered us? Impossible.
Didn't you telephone me not 5 minutes ago and tell me that Mr. Ackroyd had been found murdered?
No, indeed, sir. I wouldn't dream of doing such a thing.
You mean to say that this is all a hoax? That there's nothing the matter with Mr. Ackroyd? Where is he?
He's still in the study, I fancy, sir. The ladies have gone to bed and Major Blunt and Mr. Raymond are in the billiard room.
I think I'll just look in and see him for a minute. I know he didn't want to be disturbed again, but this practical joke has made me uneasy.
Quite so, sir, yes. Well, if you don't object to my accompanying you as far as the door... Sir.
Not at all. Come along. Aykroyd! Aykroyd! The door's locked. Aykroyd! Aykroyd! It's Shepherd! Let me in! Look here, Parker. I'm going to break the door down, or rather we are. Oh, now I'll take responsibility.
Oh, well, if you say so, sir, yes. Oh, my God. There's a dagger in the back of his neck.
Don't touch it. You must go at once to the telephone and ring up the police station. Tell them what has happened.
A bad business, Doctor. No possibility of accident or suicide?
None whatever.
You say you had a telephone message from the butler.
A message I never sent. I've not been near the telephone the whole evening.
Very odd, that. Did it sound like Parker's voice, Doctor?
Well, I can't say I noticed. I took it for granted, you see.
And how long do you think he's been dead?
Half an hour at least, perhaps longer.
And the door was locked on the inside. What about the window?
I closed and bolted it earlier this evening, at Mr. Aykroyd's request.
Well, it's open now, anyway. This is the way he went, all right, and got in. See the footmarks? Rubber studs in the shoes, plain as a pikestaff. Has anyone seen any suspicious-looking strangers hanging about? Mr. Raymond, have you?
No.
As a matter of fact, I have. I met a man this evening, just as I was turning out of the gates. He asked me the way to Fernley Park.
And what time would that be?
Just 9 o'clock. I heard the church clock.
And did he come here, Parker?
No, sir, no. No one has been to the house at all this evening.
Except through the window. When was Mr. Aykroyd last seen alive?
Oh, probably by me, when I left at around 9:10. He told me he didn't wish to be disturbed, and I repeated the order to Parker.
Just so, sir, yes.
Mr. Aykroyd was certainly alive at 9:30, for I heard his voice in here talking.
Who was he talking to, Mr. Raymond?
At the time, I took it that it was Dr. Shepherd who was with him, but now it appears that the doctor had already left.
You didn't happen to catch any of the conversation, did you?
I did catch just a fragment, and it struck me as distinctly odd. He said something like, the calls on my purse have been so frequent of late that I feel it is impossible for me to accede to your request.
A demand for money. It could be that we have here a very important clue. Still, one thing's clear. Mr. Aykroyd was alive and well at 9:30.
If you'll excuse me, sir, Miss Flora saw him after that.
Miss Flora?
Yes, sir, yes, about 9:45, that would be. I was bringing a tray with whiskey and soda when Miss Flora, who was just coming out of this room, you see, she stopped me and she said her uncle didn't want to be disturbed.
I must see Miss Aykroyd at once, but I don't want to worry her about the murder just yet. Ask her to come to the billiard room, would you?
I don't understand. What has happened? I mean, what do you want me to tell you?
It's just this, Miss Aykroyd. Barker says you came out of your uncle's study at 9:45. Is that right?
Quite right. I'd been to say good night to him.
Do you mind telling us what passed between you and your uncle?
I went in to say good night and kissed him. And he said something about my frock looking nice, and then he told me to run away as he was busy. But why are you asking me these questions? What's happened?
It's bad news, I'm afraid, my dear. Your uncle...
Yes?
This is going to be a shock for you. Your uncle is dead.
When?
Very soon after you left him, I'm afraid.
Oh.
Catch her, Doctor. She's going to faint. How is the young lady, Doctor?
Coming round nicely. Mrs. Aykroyd's with her.
Mrs. Aykroyd?
Her mother. Aykroyd's sister-in-law.
Ah, yes. Take a look at the murder weapon, Doctor. Something of a curio, I should think.
The edge is razor sharp. A child could drive that into a man.
Where did it come from, I wonder?
I gave it to him.
Did you? And who are you, sir?
This is Major Blunt, an old friend of Mr. Aykroyd's.
You identify the dagger positively, Major Blunt?
Absolutely. No doubt about it, whatever. I bought it in Tunis. I knew it was the kind of thing he would like.
And where was this curio usually kept?
In the silver table in the drawing room.
Good Lord.
Yes, Doctor?
It's probably of no importance. But when I arrived for dinner, I heard the lid of the silver table being shut down in the drawing room.
How did you know it was the silver table lid?
I made a long, tedious explanation to the inspector, who then took it into his head to take the fingerprints of Raymond and Parker and Major Blunt and myself. And that concluded the night's proceedings. In the morning, I hurried unforgivably over my round, and I returned to find Caroline in a state of great excitement. Flora Ackroyd had come to see me.
Dr. Shepherd, I have come to ask you to help me.
Of course he'll help you, my dear.
What can I do for you?
I want you to come to the Larches with me.
The Larches? It's only next door.
To see that funny little man?
Yes. You know who he is, don't you?
We fancied he might be a retired hairdresser.
A hairdresser? He's Hercule Poirot, the private detective. He's supposed to have been one of the greatest criminal investigators in Europe.
So that's who he is. But why do you want to go and see him?
To get him to investigate this murder, of course.
Oh, Ralph may have done foolish things in the past, but he wouldn't murder anyone.
What has Ralph got to do with it?
Oh, Flora, you must believe me. I never thought it of him.
Well, then why did you go to the Three Boars last night, on your way home, after Uncle's body was found?
How did you know about that?
I went there this morning. I heard from the servants that Ralph was staying there.
You had no idea that he was in King's Abbot?
No. I was astounded. I went there and asked for him. They told me what I suppose they told you last night, that he went out at about 9 o'clock yesterday evening and never came back.
And that's why you want to go to Hercule Poirot. Now, isn't it better to leave things as they are? The police don't suspect Ralph in the least.
But that's just it. They do suspect him. A man from Cranchester turned up this morning. Inspector Raglan, a horrid, weaselly little man. I found he'd been to the Three Boars this morning before me. Oh, please let us go to this Monsieur Poirot.
But what is it that you wish me to accomplish, mademoiselle?
I want you to find the murderer.
I see. But the police will do that, will they not?
They might make a mistake. I want the truth.
All the truth?
All the truth.
Then I accept, and I hope you will not regret those words. Now, tell me all the circumstances.
Dr. Shepherd had better tell you. He knows more than I do.
I told Poirot the facts as I saw them, and then took him off to meet the officer in charge of the case.
Inspector Raglan, monsieur. We've no need for amateurs to come butting in.
It is true that I have retired from the world. I never intended to take up a case again. Above all things, I have a horror of publicity, so I must beg that, in the case of my being able to contribute something to the solution of the mystery, my name may not be mentioned.
Well, of course, I've heard you've had some very remarkable successes.
I have had much experience. And I admire enormously your English police. If you would permit me to assist you, I would be honored and flattered.
Then I'd better tell you about the latest development, Mr. Poirot.
We've
been able to fingerprint all those present in the house at the time of the murder, and none of their prints correspond to what we found on the murder weapon.
And those of Captain Ralph Payton?
I see you don't let the grass grow under your feet, Mr. Poirot. It'll be a pleasure to work with you, I'm sure. No. We're going to take that young gentleman's fingerprints as soon as we can lay hands upon him.
What have you got against Mr. Payton, Inspector?
He went out just on 9 o'clock last night. Was seen in the neighbourhood of Fernley Park somewhere about 9:30. Not been seen since. Believed to be in serious money difficulties. I've got a pair of his shoes here. Shoes with rubber studs on them. He had two pairs, almost exactly alike. I'm going up there now to compare them with the footmarks found at the window. Care to come along to the scene of the crime, Mr. Poirot?
And this is where the body was found?
In this chair, yes.
And this letter you spoke of, where was it when you left the room?
Mr. Ackroyd had laid it down on this little table at his right hand.
And apart from the letter being missing, everything was in its place?
Yes, I think so.
There was a fire in the grate, I see. When you found Mr. Ackroyd, how was the fire? Was it low?
I really can't say. Perhaps...
Could you ring for the butler, Doctor?
Yes, of course.
Now, tell me, Monsieur le Docteur, when you broke down the door, was the hilt of the dagger plainly visible from the door?
Yes.
Both you and Parker could see it at once?
Yes.
The bell rang, sir.
Ah, come in, Parker. This gentleman wants to ask you something.
Mm. When you broke down the door with Dr. Shepherd last night and found your master dead, what was the state of the fire?
It had burned very low, sir. It was almost out.
Look around you, my good Parker. Is this room exactly as it was then?
The curtains were drawn, sir, and the electric light was on.
Anything else?
Yes, sir, yes. The chair to the left of the door was drawn out a little more.
Mm-hmm. Just show me.
Yes.
Ah. The chair was facing the door.
Yes, sir, yes.
Voilà, c'est curieux. No one would want to sit in a chair in such a position, I fancy. Now, who pushed it back into place again, I wonder? Did you, my friend?
No, sir. I was too upset with seeing the master.
Did you, Doctor?
Can't help you, I'm afraid.
Curious.
Well, surely it isn't important.
No, it is completely unimportant. That is why it is so interesting.
Will that be all, sir?
Yes, Parker, for the moment. Yes. Thank you.
I wish you'd tell me about your methods, Monsieur Poirot. The point about the fire, for instance.
Oh, that was very simple. You leave Mr. Aykroyd at 9:10, was it not?
Yes, exactly, I should say.
Now, the window at that time is closed and bolted and the door unlocked. At 9:15, when the body is discovered, the door is locked and the window is open. Who opened it? Well, clearly only Mr. Aykroyd himself could have done so, and for one of two reasons. Either because he was unbearably hot, or because he admitted someone that way. Now, we know from the excellent Parker that the fire was nearly out, so he must have opened the window to let someone in, someone known to him, since he had previously shown himself uneasy on the subject of that same window.
Put like that, it sounds so simple.
Ah, here is the good Inspector Davis.
That telephone call has been traced. It did not come from here. It was put through to Dr. Shepherd at 10:15 last night from a public call box at King's Abbott Station. And at 10:23, the night mail leaves for Liverpool.
And there's precious little chance of anyone being noticed telephoning at that time of night.
But why telephone at all? That's what I find so extraordinary. Seems no rhyme or reason in the thing.
Ah, be sure, Inspector, there was a reason.
But what reason could it be?
When we know that, we shall know everything. This case is very curious and very interesting. Now, you say it was 9:00, Dr. Shepherd, when you met the stranger outside the gate.
Yes, I heard the church clock chime the hour.
How long would it take him to reach the house, to reach the window, for instance?
Oh, 5 minutes at the outside. 2 or 3 minutes only, if he took the path at the right of the drive.
But to do that, he would have to know the way.
That's true.
Hmm. We could find out, doubtless, if Mr. Aykroyd had received any strangers during the past week.
The secretary, Raymond, could tell you that.
Or Parker.
Why don't we talk to them both?
No, I can't remember anyone. Can you, Parker?
There was the young man who came on Wednesday, sir, from Curtis and Trout, I understood he was.
But that's not the kind of stranger that Monsieur Poirot means. Mr. Aykroyd had some idea of purchasing a dictaphone. The firm in question sent down their representative, but nothing came of it. Mr. Aykroyd did not decide to purchase.
Oh, well, there is nothing in that, then. Thank you, gentlemen.
Good day, Monsieur Poirot.
It doesn't look as if this is going to be much of a case, Mr. Poirot. I'm sorry, too. A nice enough fellow gone wrong.
But tell me, how have you been able to pinpoint the murderer so precisely in so short a time?
Let me show you my method, Monsieur. The doctor here says that Mr. Aykroyd was dead by 10:00 at the latest. You stick to that, Doctor?
Oh, certainly.
And Mr. Aykroyd was last seen alive by his niece at 9:45. On this sheet of paper, I have a list of where everyone in the house was in that crucial quarter of an hour. Apart from a couple of maids who I think we can rule out on the grounds of motive, we know exactly where everyone was.
A very complete list. May I keep it?
Of course, Mr. Poirot. I have a copy. But now we come to the essential point. The woman at the lodge, Mary Black. was pulling the curtains when she saw Ralph Peyton turn in at the gate and go up to the house.
She is sure of that?
Quite sure. She knows him well by sight.
And what time was that?
9:25. It all fits in without a flaw. At around 9:30, Mr. Raymond hears Mr. Aykroyd refusing to give someone some money. Captain Peyton leaves, as he has entered through the window. He walks along the terrace, angry and baffled. He comes to the open drawing room window. While Miss Flora is saying good night to her uncle, he steals in and takes the dagger from the silver table. And then he returns to the study. I needn't go into details. He goes straight to the station, rings up from there.
Why?
It's difficult to say exactly why he did that. But murderers do funny things. But come along, I'll show you those footprints. We got these shoes from Peyton's room at the Three Boars. They're not the same pair that actually made these prints, but you can see they're almost exactly the same.
But surely a great many people wear shoes with rubber studs in them.
That's so, of course. I shouldn't put so much stress on the footmarks if it wasn't for everything else.
A very foolish young man, Captain Ralph Peyton, to leave so much evidence of his presence.
The cleverest of them makes mistakes sometimes. And now, gentlemen, if you'll excuse me, I'll be getting back to Cranchester to make my report.
Good day, Inspector.
Au revoir. Do you see the little summer house over there, Doctor?
Mm-hmm.
It arouses my curiosity. If you can spare the time, shall we investigate it together?
It doesn't look as if we're going to find anything interesting in here. Deck chairs, croquet set.
Well, perhaps it was not to be expected. But, what is this?
What have you found?
A scrap of stiff white material. Cambric, I think you call it. What do you make of it, my friend?
A scrap from a torn handkerchief, hmm?
And what is this? Do you see, Doctor?
A goose quill, by the look of it.
A goose quill and a fragment of a handkerchief. But remember, a good laundry does not starch a handkerchief. Shall we go back to the house?
Une belle propriété, Fernley House. Who inherits, I wonder? You had not thought of that before, eh?
No, I wish I had.
I wonder just what you mean by that.
Simply that...
Oh, no. You would not tell me your real thought. Everyone has something to hide.
You believe that?
Of course, my friend. But it is not easy to hide things from Hercule Poirot. He has a knack of finding out. But let us walk a little further. The air is pleasant today. England is very beautiful. Oh, and so are English girls. Do you see, my friend, the pretty picture below us?
Flora Aykroyd and Major Bond.
How charming they look, sitting together by the goldfish pond. Like Peleas and Melisande. But we must interrupt their little idyll, I fear. I must talk with the Major.
Flora.
Hello.
Major.
This is Monsieur Hercule Poirot, Hector. I expect you've heard of him.
And I know Major Blunt by reputation from his exploits in Africa. I'm glad that I've encountered you, Monsieur. I am in need of some information that you can give me.
Only too glad to be of assistance.
When did you last see Mr. Aykroyd alive?
The dinner.
And you neither saw nor heard anything of him after that?
I didn't see him. Heard his voice.
Oh, pardon me, what time was that?
About 9:30. I was walking up and down smoking in front of the drawing room window. I heard Aykroyd talking in his study.
To whom was he talking?
I haven't the faintest idea. I only heard Aykroyd's voice.
Can you remember what the words were?
I'm afraid I can't. Something quite ordinary and unimportant. I didn't give it much attention. Oh, I thought I saw a woman disappearing into the bushes. Just a gleam of white, you know. I must have been mistaken.
Ah, that is most interesting. Thank you, Major.
It's nearly lunchtime. We'd better be getting back.
Oh, you will lunch with us, Monsieur Poirot. I should like you to meet my mother. You'll stay too, won't you, Doctor?
I'd be happy to.
And I shall be delighted.
Oh, we'll see you in a few minutes, then.
What hair. The real gold. They will make a pretty pair. She and the handsome Captain Peyton. And there is something gold that glistens in the water. Do you see, Doctor? There, among the weed.
What have you found?
A wedding ring. And there is something written inside it. From R. March 13th.
This is Monsieur Poirot, Mother. I told you about him this morning.
Oh, yes, he is to find Ralph, is he not?
He is to find out who killed Uncle.
Such a dreadful thing to happen. I can't help feeling it must have been an accident of some kind. Roger was so fond of handling queer curios. His hand must have slipped or something.
And this is Mr. Hammond, our solicitor.
Ah, Mr. Hammond, I desire a little information from you.
You are acting on behalf of Captain Ralph Peyton?
Not so. I am acting in the interests of justice. Miss Ackroyd has asked me to investigate the death of her uncle. I take it you will not object to telling me the terms of Roger Ackroyd's will?
I have no objection, Monsieur Poirot, but perhaps we should have Mr. Raymond in with us.
I'll go and fetch him.
The terms of the will are quite simple. After paying small legacies to Miss Russell and Mr. Raymond and certain charitable bequests.
Now, the charitable bequests, they interest me not.
Oh, quite so. The income on £10,000 worth of shares to be paid to Mrs. Cecil Ackroyd during her lifetime. Miss Flora Ackroyd inherits £20,000 outright. The residue, including this property and the shares, to his adopted son, Ralph Peyton.
Mr. Ackroyd possessed a large fortune?
A very large fortune. Captain Peyton will be an exceedingly wealthy young man. Now, as to the question of money, Mrs. Ackroyd, have you all you need for the present? Oh, I mean, ready money. If not, I can arrange to let you have whatever you require.
There shouldn't be any problem there.
Hmm?
Mr. Ackroyd cashed a cheque for £100 yesterday for wages and other expenses due today. At the moment, it is still intact.
Where is this money? In his desk?
No, he always kept his cash in his bedroom, in an old collar box, to be accurate.
Mm. I think we ought to make sure the money is there before I leave.
Certainly, I'll take you up there. Inspector Ragland will have the key for the door.
He kept his money like that, in an unlocked drawer.
Mr. Ackroyd had perfect faith in the honesty of all his servants.
Ah, quite so.
Here is the money.
Thank you.
We'll find the 100 intact, Mr. Hammond. Mr. Ackroyd put it in the collar box in my presence last night.
£100? There's only 60 here.
Impossible.
See for yourself.
So, either he paid out that £40 sometime last evening, or else it has been stolen.
If Mr. Ackroyd paid that money away himself, it may have a bearing on the mystery of the crime. What about the servants? Have you missed anything before, Mrs. Ackroyd?
Oh, no.
None of them leaving or anything like that?
Well, the parlour maid is leaving, I believe.
When?
She gave notice yesterday.
Any idea why?
No, I have nothing to do with the servants. Miss Russell attends to household matters.
Then perhaps Miss Russell would be good enough to arrange for us to have a word with her.
We will leave the questioning to Inspector Raglan, my dear doctor.
Oh, yes, of course.
Ursula Bourne, Inspector.
I understand you are leaving, Miss Bourne.
Yes, sir.
Why is that?
I disarranged some papers on Mr. Ackroyd's desk. He was very angry about it and said I had better leave.
Were you up in Mr. Ackroyd's bedroom at all last night? Tidying up or anything?
No, sir. That is the housemaid's work. I never went near that part of the house.
I must tell you, my girl, that a large sum of money is missing from Mr. Ackroyd's room.
I know nothing about any money. If you think I took it and that is why Mr. Ackroyd dismissed me, you're wrong.
I am not accusing you of anything, my girl. Don't flare up so.
Excuse me. It was yesterday afternoon that Mr. Ackroyd dismissed you, How long did the interview last?
I don't know.
20 minutes? Half an hour?
Something like that.
Not longer?
Not longer than half an hour, certainly.
Thank you, mademoiselle.
That'll do, Miss Bourne.
Good day, Inspector.
Has she been here long? Have you got a copy of her references?
Yes, I should have it here. Here you are, Inspector.
Thank you. Reads all right. Mrs. Richard Folliot, Marby Grange, Marby. Know anything about her?
Quite good county people.
Thank you, Miss Russell. I think that'll be all for now.
Very well.
Perhaps you would be so kind as to keep me company on the way home, Doctor.
Do you really wish to aid me to take part in this investigation?
Yes, indeed.
Would it be possible for you to go to Marby tomorrow, say?
Tomorrow's Sunday. Yes, I could manage it. What do you want me to do there?
See this Mrs. Folliot, who wrote the reference. Find out all you can about Ursula Bourne.
Oh, very well. But I don't much care for the job.
Oh, please, help me, Doctor. A man's life may depend on it.
My little outing to Marby yielded nothing. Mrs. Folliot looked uncomfortable and ill at ease when I mentioned the name of Ursula Bourne, and would tell me nothing about her beyond the fact that she had worked there for a time and was capable and satisfactory. Whatever the mystery centering round Ursula Bourne might be, I was not going to learn it through Mrs. Folliot. When I arrived home, Caroline had that look of suppressed exultation on her face which I know only too well. Poirot had paid a call on her. It seems he has an insane nephew and is trying to find somewhere local where he can be treated. Why he should have thought Caroline could help him, I cannot imagine. Unfortunately, he managed to worm out of her the conversation she overheard in the wood that night. I fear it will only help Raglan to tighten the noose round Ralph Peyton's neck.
He looks bad, Mr. Poirot. If only we had Captain Peyton's fingerprints. At least we'd know whether they were the ones on the dagger.
Monsieur l'inspecteur, beware of the blind... The little street that has no end.
You mean a blind alley?
That is it. So it may be with those fingerprints.
Come now, you've got to admit that those prints were made by someone who's in the house that night.
Bien entendu. You have not overlooked anyone?
No one.
The quick or the dead?
The quick? You mean...
The dead. I am suggesting that the fingerprints on the dagger handle are those of Mr. Ackroyd himself, that the murderer closed his dead victim's hand round the dagger handle.
Well, it's an idea. I'll look into it. But don't you be disappointed if nothing comes of it.
Oh. Another time I must be more careful of his amour propre. And now, my friend, there is something I would like you to arrange for me. A little family reunion round the table. Ackroyd's sister-in-law, Flora, Major Blunt, Mr. Raymond, and, of course, yourself.
It sounds more like a ghastly board meeting, but I'll do my best. In about half an hour?
Monsieur, mesdames, I have called you together for a special purpose. To begin with, I want to make a special plea to mademoiselle.
To me?
Mademoiselle, you are engaged to Captain Ralph Peyton. If anyone is in his confidence, you are. Will you not trust me and tell me where he is hiding?
Monsieur Poirot, I swear to you that I have no idea of where Ralph is, and that I have neither seen him nor heard from him, either on the day of the murder or since.
Bien, that is that. Now, I appeal to the others who sit round this table. If you know where Ralph Peyton is hiding, speak out. Understand this? I mean to arrive at the truth. I mean to know. And I shall know, in spite of you all.
How do you mean, in spite of us all?
every one of you in this room is concealing something from me.
It
may be something unimportant, trivial, which is supposed to have no bearing on the case, but there it is. Each of you has something to hide. Come now. Am I right? I am answered. I appeal to you all. Tell me the truth. Will no one speak? C'est dommage.